Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Staff and Graf Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
In links or salad?
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
You have a light that's right in between us. You had to wear a hat today, Rachel?
Yeah, I had to wear a hat
and
today.
So now we have a light. I cannot see your face. So we might as well just talk without, like, it doesn't matter how much you move. It's right at your face level.
It really is.
So I can't see it, but that's fine. Because Rachel needs to be a hat girl today.
I'm in my hat girl era.
You can't poke around the light, too. It's yeah, you're okay. The pains we go to accommodate Rachel's hat girl era. It's crazy. All right.
I'm going to be wearing a hat every single show until my hair grows out properly.
So we're going to deal with this.
Well, we're going to have a solution here. Okay. We're testing out, if you haven't noticed, the cameras have been a little finicky of late, and so we're testing out some new settings. And as part of that, the light basically has to shine directly on my face. The trials and tribulations of like trying to get stuff up, but
I know it's crazy.
We're on our way to new mics. We're going to have new lights at some point.
Yeah, they're replacing me. They're getting a new mic. So it's going to be great. All right, we have to talk about Alex Morello and his stupid fucking hockey team quick. But before we do that, let's talk about hockey that actually matters, which is the Women's World Championships, Canada. It seems like every time they play, there's a golden goal situation. It comes down to the wire. And as always, Team Canada, salute our troops. They pull it out. They win 6-5 in OT to win the Women's Worlds. Huge stuff. Obviously, Marie-Philippe Poulin scoring twice. It's just incredible stuff.
She also missed like a breakaway really early in OT. And it's like, imagine first of all, missing almost the entire tournament with injury and then coming back and scoring a hat trick, including the OT winner. Like, that is just, that would be the most Marie-Philippe Poulin thing ever. But she didn't end up scoring, and then the Americans took a too many men penalty that was...
Too many what?
Too many players on the ice. It's fucking... The rule book says too many men. I don't care. And...
Bad feminist, Rachel Dory.
Yeah, I'm not in on all that stuff. I don't care enough, honestly.
Rachel Dory believes that the woke mind virus has infiltrated hockey. It was pretty nuts.
And then, so the U.S. takes that penalty, and within, I think it was like with like 8 or so seconds left in the penalty, Danielle Sardakny, who's a younger player who's kind of coming up.
I hadn't really heard of her.
Exactly. This is sort of her like first coming out big party. Shot with the team. Mm-hmm. Alice Shelton pulled a goal off the goal line probably like 2 minutes before the end of the third period. But yeah, OT winner. This was one of the best hockey games in a long time. Caroline Harvey, who's a defenseman for the Americans, she's only 21. She is going to be so, so dominant for the next like 15 years. She's already arguably their best defenseman, and she had a hell of a game yesterday. But I think generally speaking, and the thing I wanted to touch on was like, now that the PWHL is playing and you have players from a ton of different nationalities. You got Switzerland, mm-hmm. you got Germany, Finland, everything like that. Because these women are able to play against each other, naturally they're going to improve. So I wonder if sort of, I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but like I could see in 5 years, we may not have that Canada-US always situation. No. Like I think we're sort of on the precipice because of the league that we're going to have better developed players from other countries, and it's going to elevate the play of the Women's Worlds to the point where we don't just have Canada, US.
What I think is absolutely wild in a good way is that the NHL, like, they wrung their hands for so long about breaking midseason for the Olympics and how we can't do that. We can't take 2-3 weeks off in the middle of the season. Oh, it's too much of a hassle. Oh, it'll ruin it. The PWHL playoffs start like right after. Like, imagine if the league, like right now, is basically like the end of the season. Like where the on the timeline or where on the schedule we are right now is like the end of the season's basically done.
Right, and every other league.
Can you imagine?
To send their players to the world.
Can you imagine if the NHL was like now we're gearing up for the playoff race, like where seedings are set and everything like that. The NHL was like, whoop, let's stop. Take 3 weeks off or 2 weeks off. Send our players across the country or overseas. No, overseas in this one, obviously. But like, let's send them to a big tournament where they can play each other and everything. And then we go into the playoffs. It's wild. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, theoretically, you could do that. You just can't have an 82-game season. And
I would say about that next time the NHL goes, oh, I don't know if we can go to the Olympics.
Like, shut the hell up. Yes,
stop their thing. It's pretty fantastic. It's always a great game when Canada and USA play each other in any type of women's hockey, any championship, any format. It's always good. The big names always come to the top. They always show out. And what's great is that the big names did show out here. But like you said, with Carolyn Harvey, with Danielle
Sardakny. It's a hard name to say. It took me like 4 times.
Daniel Sardine. Exactly. The good young players are coming in too. Like, there's another generation that's coming, which is fantastic. All right, Rachel. We got to talk. And we're going to keep it as brief as we can here. Because obviously the news hasn't been official yet. So we'll dive into it a bit deeper.
They would like it to be official by Saturday.
Yeah, before Saturday. Like, I had heard, or not I, like everyone had heard that the date that they were likely looking for was Wednesday, April 17th. But clearly this is a very nuanced and difficult situation. Like, when it comes to just legalese, the whole reason...
Get ready to learn legalese, buddy.
But the whole reason why this is the NHL is like brokering this deal, the whole reason why they're putting $1 billion in Alex Morello's stupid fucking pocket is to ensure that this doesn't turn into a crazy litigious legal battle where he turns around and sues them. But I want to talk about, before we talk about sort of the deal that's in place that everyone knows, but Chris Johnson came out and like confirmed a lot of stuff today in a column for The Athletic. I want to talk about two things. One, they find like in two things that both encapsulate everything that is. And like, I'm sorry, Coyotes fans, but like this, it's very important that we come out here in every show. And as long as it's relevant, we just like friggin' sledgehammer Alex Morello when it comes to his business practices, because as the way this deal is set up now, the NHL is basically holding a spot for him to bring the Coyotes back to be an owner again, and
which is a genuinely awful idea.
Yeah, and you know what, it won't happen. He won't win that land auction. He will not be able to build the arena that he needs to, that the NHL like will require him to have to bring a team back. It just won't happen. Like he's not going to get it done. If he hasn't got it done now, he's not, especially like, you think they're going to be cool with him doing all this now? Now the team's being ripped away.
The mayor of Scottsdale's like,
exactly. Like, what's crazy is the mayor of Scottsdale, as we talked about, came out last week and wrote an op-ed basically telling Alex Morello to go fuck himself.
Do you know how bad you have, like how down bad you have to be for the mayor to write an op-ed specifically about you?
And that was like the second or third most embarrassing thing that happened in that week. Like this guy's a clown car.
Okay, so let's...
But the main thing is that he comes out with, like, the whole time throughout all this, Coyotes fans have been left to grapple with the fact that they're getting their team ripped away from them, and their owner is, or their team and their owner specifically, is not only not acknowledging the fact that that is happening, but he's like gaslighting them with like these motivational tweets and all this other kind of stuff.
Well, and not even just that. Like, they tweeted out that statement from Alex Morello.
So I was just about to say,
yeah. In all caps.
Yeah.
And it was very clearly not saved properly because you could see the blinking cursor in the actual
photo they tweeted out.
Like,
they screenshotted a Word doc. All you
have to do is save as JPEG.
Or PDF.
But like for Twitter, you ideally want to go JPEG. I, under no circumstances, zero, should there be a cursor in an ownership statement. And then beyond that, so they tweet that out. They play Calgary on Sunday night and nothing from the Twitter account. It was a 6-5 game. It wasn't a 0-0 like shootout loss or whatever. It was a 6-5 game. It was 11 goals in the game. Nothing from the Coyotes. So it's, you can tell because like we know who runs the account and like how he operates. That was clearly an edict from
or the guy's just not there anymore.
No, he's there. He's there.
But they're firing all those people.
No. They brought him on specifically for relocation. Like he started a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So he was brought on specifically for this. So
the rest of their social media team is gone.
Yeah, I know.
Like all their business operation people are gone. Now, the thing is after all the bullshit that this team has tweeted, they basically shit posted their way into a relocation.
Yeah.
That's all they did. Alex Morello Jr. used the official Arizona Coyotes Twitter account, the one with the golden checkmark that you pay $1,000 a month to have, that is supposed to be like the face of communication for your business entity, for your hockey team. He used that as basically his own personal burner account. And after all of that, your second last game, you don't say a thing. You don't tweet out the starting lineup. You don't tweet out the starting goalie. You don't do any goal.
Tweet out the final score.
When all of this shit came down, when the news first broke that they were moving, basically, or that it was likely that they were going to move, the Coyotes account tweeted, everyone wish Dylan Gunther a happy birthday.
It was like, wait, what?
during all that, like, it's not like they've read the room before.
So
with the statement too, Rachel, I'm not sure if you saw this, but someone put it into an AI tracker and it was 99% AI generated.
Oh man. See, like, okay.
They didn't even spend the time to use their own brain, like in critical thinking, to write something from the heart. Even though it clearly it's not from the heart, he basically used like three paragraphs to
say ChatGPT'd that.
He basically used three paragraphs to say, "Wait, I can't tell you anything yet. I promise I will, though." Like, but he just basically put into ChatGPT, "Please write a statement to Coyotes fans that I will keep them updated on relocation soon."
So here's where we're gonna end on this.
Yeah.
He has, for 5 years, he holds the team brand and Arizona, like...
And their AHL affiliate, too.
Yeah, but hang on. So he owns NHL only. I honestly don't give a fuck about the AHL team because it doesn't mean anything. But, like, he owns the NHL, like, territory rights in Arizona.
Yeah.
He's entitled to an expansion team, and he gets to keep like the branding and like the Coyotes branding and stuff like that. My issue with that, and we're going to do an episode in the off season. This is a July episode where we're going to do a breakdown on like the new team and like what happens. And when we get all of the legalese and we're able to sift through it and understand kind of what the direction is going to be. But I think it's a major, I understand the league trying to protect themselves legally. But I think if you're Gary Bettman, you are hoping to high hell that this arena doesn't get built in 5 years. Because if you have to give this guy an expansion team, number one, the NHL shouldn't be expanding because they can't even keep 32 teams afloat. Mm. But number two, this guy's already shown that he's a shitty owner and he doesn't deserve a team. And no, he just shouldn't be trusted to steward a team in the future. Like, I'm sorry, but fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, that's an entirely different story. And so that's kind of where we're gonna end, is like,
well, I'm gonna let you in on a little secret, Rachel.
Oh god. Okay.
He's not, like, they're not, the Coyotes will return to Arizona. Alex Morello will not be their owner.
See, and that's the ideal situation.
No, like, that's not that is what is going to happen.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if you're the NHL, you want to be in the fifth biggest market in the United States. However, you need to make sure you don't have some jabroni running it. So the NHL's job here, Gary Bettman specifically, because his job is ownership, is to properly vet somebody to be able to steward a team in Arizona. But the problem that you have now is you don't need expansion. 32 teams, already too many teams.
Exactly.
Until like 75 to 80% of the team doesn't, or 80% of the league doesn't rely need revenue sharing, you shouldn't be expanding. End of story. Goodbye. Thank you very much.
It will not happen. Like, I'm telling you, it will, like, I know, you know, a lot of people are worried that, like, potentially Morello, he will not win that land auction. And even if he does,
I want Ryan Smith to buy it out of spite.
That'd be hilarious. That's nothing to him, too. It's like $65 million.
Speaking of which, okay, hang on.
He will not win it. And even if he does, Rachel, even if he does find a way to win that land auction, he will not get,
he won't be able to build anything because of Scottsdale.
He will not get that built. Like, I'm telling you, if Alex Morello wins the land auction, gets the arena built, and brings the Coyotes back, I will, literally,
go to the home opener. Mike will fly.
I will fly to the home opener, and I will streak down Front Street. I'm telling you, like, legitimately, I will, like, you. We have it on tape now. It will not happen.
So, do you think the one positive to come out of all of this?
Yeah.
Ryan Smith,
Captain Canada, owns
the Jazz. Mm-hmm. Lauri Markkanen, Keontae George, John Collins, whatever. Do we think that now that he's going to be in charge of a team that he might actually spend on this team and they might be competitive? Because they have so much pick capital, they have so many good prospects that realistically, if they did well in free agency this year, I could conceivably see them challenging for the playoffs next year. Because you're under a new owner who actually wants to spend to the cap and like isn't going to mess around. And because you're under a new owner, perhaps players will want to play there because it's not going to be mental warfare like Matt Dumba said. I wonder, given how good their cap situation is, because they haven't signed anybody for God knows how long. I wonder, like, is this kind of the ideal situation of, like, you have no bad contracts, really, and it allows you to be competitive because you're Ryan Smith and you have billions of dollars?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess
we'll have to see, right?
Well, it all hinges. First, I know you wanted to have to end it on like a happy note, but this happy note only reinforces the sour note of the fact that the Coyotes fans literally, like, there was basically one year where they were able to say that the team was really good was when they made it, surprisingly, to the Western Conference Final,
and that was on the back of Mike Smith.
Exactly, but the Coyotes fans have basically never seen good hockey, and they've just gritted their teeth and suffered through so many failed rebuilds that finally, when one looks like it might transition to something good, the amount of pick capital, the amount of prospects that they have, Logan Cooley, Dylan Gunther, all these guys, like, incredible stuff, and they finally look like they're turning the corner, and then they move, like, then they get ripped out of their hand. It's crazy. What will determine how good that team is, like, you're right, they have a billion dollars in cap space. Basically, they have a billion picks in the first three rounds for the next, like, however many drafts, you know, like
you could trade that capital and actually bring in players.
Exactly. They have great, and I think that might be a big thing they do. Yeah. Because I'm not sure, like, how, like, the first thing we heard is that a lot of Arizona players are not super happy at the thought of moving to Salt Lake. I know it's moving from Arizona to Salt Lake. I get it. But, like, it's a matter of, do you think NHL players will want to play? Because you can have all the cap space in the world.
We had a YouTube commenter being like, the Salt Lake City slander is so real. You got to be careful. I'm like, okay, if you're comparing Phoenix to Salt Lake City, you need to give your goddamn head a shake. I don't even know what to tell you, man. That's like comparing, like, literally some remote city in the middle of nowhere to a major metropolis. Like, it's just, you know, hey, man, what? I'm done talking about the Coyotes. Yeah.
Hey, man,
I'm
look,
fucking
all
done.
I'll say is there's a reason why when LeBron became a free agent in 2010, he didn't go, you know what? I'm taking my talents to Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It didn't, exactly. like you have to be somewhat, yeah. It's just a matter of whether or not if players will want to play in Salt Lake, then they can potentially turn it around really quick. I have a question that I wanted to pose to you before we get into our deep dive.
Okay.
And I actually, like, it was because I saw a thing of playoff beards and it made me think about the etiquette around a playoff beard, Rachel.
Okay.
And you know, like as a man, I can grow one. As a woman, I don't believe you can grow
one.
I
cannot.
I didn't want to assume, just in case. And we all know that, you know, there are women that can grow beards, there are men that can't, you know, everything in between. But my question is, let's say you are a man and you have a beard. Let's say you even have like stubble or like scruff like I have right now. I do need to shave. But the playoffs start. Do you shave before you go into the playoffs and then grow the playoff beard throughout the course of the playoffs? Or do you go or do you just go into the playoffs and not shave and have that beard grow on top of your existing beard?
Okay, it depends. There is one exception that I can think of.
Okay.
And one exception only.
What?
Brent Burns. If he opened Saturday in the playoffs with clean shaven, I think I'd have a stroke. Like, it's just kind of become his persona. But I think generally speaking, if you're a guy, I mean, like Kucherov kind of has a beard too, but I think generally speaking, you probably want to go in clean shaven.
I think it's Movember rules where you shave on October 31st.
Unless you're Brent Burns, because that's your shtick.
Yeah,
no, that's your shtick.
Yeah, that's true. But it's also...
Or like Radko Gudas, that's his shtick too. Like, there's a couple of guys where it's like, okay, if Austin Matthews all of a sudden decided to start growing a beard this week, no. But he can keep his mustache as far as I'm concerned, because a mustache is not a beard.
Yeah, but then I'd say he should trim up the rest of his face.
Yeah, absolutely.
He should shave the rest of his face.
I think that's sort of fair. You know what? It's honestly, hockey players are so superstitious. To each their own.
That's true.
But my thing about the playoff beards, and maybe it's, I'm a woman, so I don't appreciate it as much or like whatever, but listen, I have more hair on my head than pretty much any NHL player has like on theirs or in a beard. Like, my hair is long and thick. What I would say is, if you're going to grow that playoff beard, you need to like take care of it so it doesn't look unruly.
You know what? I'm the complete opposite of that.
I'm not saying you have to trim it. I'm saying you have to wash it. I don't want to see like shit growing in your beard.
But you know what? I honestly think what the playoff beard stands for is that it's basically a symbol that you don't care about anything else other than winning. You don't even care about your personal appearance.
Well, you should shower.
And yeah, obviously you should shower. But I'm saying like, I'm of the opinion that, and I used to do this during summers in the
Mike used to grow beards and it used to drive me insane.
It's great because like I didn't have to be on camera. I didn't have to do anything, so I could just let it grow. And it's same with these guys where like it's the playoffs. You can just focus and let it grow, and you want it to be as unwildly as it can possibly be.
But it needs to be like, and this is the thing, like, I don't mind if it gets a little unruly or scraggly, like that's fine. But like, I shouldn't on camera be able to see dandruff in your beard. That is disgusting.
I think the baseline should be like after the game when you're showering,
you wash your beard.
You run some shampoo through the beard.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking for is like.
And if it's dandruff, it's some Head and Shoulders.
I don't want to see like flakes in your beard or like bits of food, because I have seen that and I'm like, that's just
bits of food's
unruly,
crazy,
disgusting.
But like
nonsense.
I think when you grow, I think if unless you're right, unless you have a beard like
Burns,
like
Gudas.
Burns or Gudas, or like where it's like a fixture of your face,
Thornton,
like where it's a fixture of your face, then I think you should be clean shaven going to the playoffs. I think it should be a fresh start, a clean slate, and then as the playoffs go, I want your beard to reflect like the punishment that you have been through, the time that you have spent like achingly going towards this goal. I think that's personally my opinion as a man, as someone who can grow a beard, but who am I to say?
And we wonder why Mike doesn't have a girlfriend.
Exactly. There are a lot more reasons than that.
Well, yeah.
All right.
Let's get into our deep dive.
So let's talk
about, I'm excited about this.
I'm excited for you to try and convince me that getting 100 assists is more impressive than getting 70 goals.
It isn't.
Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page. That's been the show. no, but,
now both of them incredibly impressive.
Oh yeah. They're two of the most like incredible feats you can possibly accomplish in a season.
So I'm going to read this to you because I want to be correct. And I spent a bunch of time doing math today, while Mike was at work. So we're going to break down 100 assists, then 70 goals, and then we can chat about, like, what is more impressive or, like, why we think 70 is more impressive. So here's some numbers. I'm just going to throw them at you for the 100 assists. Don't block out 70 goals.
Yeah, so 100 assists.
Mike has not really seen any of this math that I've done.
No, I haven't. So you said you spend all day doing math. That sounds like a terrible day.
Yeah, well, I do math for a living, so... 100 assists has happened 13 times in NHL history. Mm. Hasn't happened since 1991. Gretzky did it 11 times consecutively.
Like in a row. That's freaking nuts.
Mario,
man,
did it once, and Bobby Orr did it once, which for a second, how the fuck did a defenseman get 100 assists?
Because he was playing against a plumber named Mike Wazowski, who was like 5'6". You know,
Monsters Inc. slandering on this podcast.
No, but it's I'm.
But like, okay, we talk about 70 goals being impressive and 100 assists being impressive. To be a defenseman that gets 100 assists is more impressive than any forward getting 100 assists. Like, not this is a that's a different
without
level of accomplishment.
A doubt. Without a doubt, it is unfathomable for a defenseman whose primary job is defense to get 100 assists. However, I think there's a reason why.
Yeah.
It's only happened during the era when guys were coming from their factory jobs to play a full hockey game that night.
So you want some era-adjusted math that I did today?
Sure.
So I used the same calculation as Hockey Reference does, but I kind of algebra'd it a little bit. So era-adjusted, we said it's been done 13 times. Mm-hmm. Era-adjusted, it's been done 6 times. 5 by Gretzky.
Okay.
Who is the sixth?
Who? Era-adjusted.
Era-adjusted, who is the sixth? I will give you a hint.
Mm-hmm.
It is not Lemieux and it is not Orr.
Is it McDavid?
It is.
Yeah.
So, in 2020, 2021, which was one of the COVID-shortened seasons, McDavid had 72 assists in 56 games.
Fuck off.
And according to Hockey Reference, that is equal to 108 assists over a full season, era-adjusted. That is preposterous and didn't get up enough attention. So...
if a guy got what was it, 72 assists, you said? Or 76?
72 and 56.
Yeah, so if a guy got 72 points in 56 games, that guy's getting like an $8 million contract the next year if he's a pending UFA. Connor McDavid did that in assists, and it was like ho-hum.
Yeah. So...
he hit 100 points. He hit 100, 100 points in 56 games.
He's absurd. So I think the reason that maybe people think it's maybe a little less impressive is because the two guys are going to do it this year. McDavid's going to hit it, and Kucherov is going to hit it. Hitting 100 this year.
This is more impressive than the COVID year, too, because McDavid did it against the whole league instead of solely
Canada.
A bunch of garbage teams in Canada.
Yeah, like Vancouver
Leafs
was dog
included.
Shit. The Habs.
The Habs were shit. Oh. The Sens were shit.
It was
the Flames were pretty wonky.
It was basically like, the Leafs, the Jets, and the Oilers. So,
yeah,
hitting 100 this year, era-adjusted, would be the seventh best season of all time behind Gretzky's 5 and McDavid's in 2020, 2021. And I feel like that season gets forgotten about just because it's prorated and era-adjusted. But you're talking about, and this number is probably the most important one, so seventh best season of all time as it pertains to assists, which is still absolutely incredible. Like, make no mistake about it.
It's historic.
Absolutely incredible, and they should both get their flowers for it.
But only one can win the heart. This is why there should be a playmaker award. There's a goal scorer award. There should be a playmaker award.
It's literally sitting right there. It's the Wayne Gretzky.
It's the
award.
Wayne Gretzky outstanding playmaker.
Not
Wayne
even
Gretzky,
most assists. You
most
have the
assists. The Rocket Richard is the most goals. The Wayne Gretzky award is the most assists. Because Wayne Gretzky, if he never scored a goal, would still be the NHL's leading scorer. That's how many assists he got.
I told my friends who are like more basketball and football guys that stat last night. And all of them just went blank face. They were like, wait, what?
It's like if you're saying, like, if Steph Curry never hit a three, he'd still be the NBA's all-time points leader. That's just bonkers. Like, it's not true, and it's bonkers. But, like with Gretzky, it's true. Like,
he was so much better than everyone else. Like,
the fact that we don't have a funny. Even just aside from that, the fact that we don't have an award named after Wayne Gretzky is insane.
It's the... So the... OHL playoff MVP is the Gretzky Award, but I'm like, the NHL has a Messier Award and not a Gretzky Award?
Oh, I hate Mark Messier too. I don't like him very much.
Here are two things I would like to see happen.
What?
Three things. One, the Conn Smythe Trophy is renamed.
Who would you like to name it after?
Ideally, Mr. Béliveau.
Justin Williams.
But I think it potentially could be renamed.
Yeah.
Number two, most assists becomes the Gretzky Award. Done. Number three, we get an award for best defensive defenseman, and that is the Norris, and the best offensive defenseman
is the Bobby Orr.
Is the Bobby Orr Trophy. And that is what I'd like to see happen. So, like I said, seventh best season of all time if, when they both hit 100 assists. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about 70 goals.
Which is the more impressive stat.
So, ready? Era adjusted, Matthews is on pace for 72.4 goals. He's already era adjusted at 70. Mm-hmm. He's already there.
What's he at right now? Not era adjusted, Rachel.
The sex number.
Hell yeah. Sex. Awesome. We love it. Continue.
So, if he scores actually 70, it would be the second best goal scoring season of all time behind Brett Hull's 90-91 season. However, if he stays at 69, he would end up third behind Ovechkin's mark in 2008. But he would only end up third by like 0.4. So that's ahead of McGillney's season, which is the last player to score 70 goals. The closest Wayne Gretzky got was 68, whereas Ovechkin got 72 in 07-08. So right now, Matthews is on pace to finish second. The lowest he can finish is third. He has 50-plus 5-on-5 goals. That has only happened 10 times in NHL history and not since Timo Salani in 93. Three of those 10 were Gretzky. And when adjusted for era, it's only happened three times. Hull and Gretzky twice. So we are talking about a feat that if you adjust for era, has been accomplished three times from an even strength perspective. Mm-hmm. And it would be the second best season for goal scoring in the history of the NHL, above anything Ovechkin did and above anything Gretzky did. So what is more impressive? Well, I think two records as it pertains to goal scoring and being higher up the list in terms of era adjusted all-time seasons makes 70 more impressive. Never mind like the players that are involved. Second all-time and only doing something that's happened three times is more impressive than seventh all-time doing something that's happened era adjusted six times.
I mean, I agree with you. Like, there's no debate here. There's no embrace debate. I agree. It's harder to score goals than it is to assist. You can't like...
That's why there's two assists on every goal.
Yeah, you can't accident... Well, you can't accident your way into a goal, obviously. But, like, you can't leave the... It's very rare that you can leave the ice and be credited with a goal. You can leave the ice and be credited with an assist. Like, it's, you know, like, not taking anything away from assists. They're important. But, like, you can't... You can score a goal unassisted. You can't assist
a goal that doesn't exist.
You can't assist on gold, you know? Like it makes sense.
And there's a reason that goals are worth like 0.7 in a game score, and then assists are, primary assists are like 0.5, and then secondary assists are like 0.3.
Or even just like in fantasy. Like there's a reason why like goal scoring goals is weighted way more in fantasy than it is for assists.
Both you know? Are obviously, like, if you think of the last two seasons we've had. Last year, we had Erik Karlsson break the 100-point mark as a defenseman, which is nuts. And McDavid score 64. Also insane. This year, we have two guys getting 100 assists and one guy who, era-adjusted, has 70 goals. Like
he might, outside of era-adjusted, like,
he might get 70.
He's at 69. He might not. He's one away. He will.
He might, but what I'm saying is era adjusted regardless.
He's at 70.
He's at 70. Yeah. So when we're having a discussion about where the game is right now, this is the best hockey has ever been in terms of talent. Mm-hmm. And we're now talking about people being like, we just spent 15 minutes going through like era adjusted stuff. And the most prevalent person that was brought up was Wayne Gretzky. Yeah.
We're seeing players be able to accomplish things that, like, in a routine way that used to never even be thought of before. And I think it's also like we grew up basically the dead puck era. Like we grew up, like we're both born in 1996.
Yeah.
So like we grew up during an era of hockey, even after the lockout where things kind of bloomed for a second. Like we went back down to Jamie Benn winning the Art Ross with 87 points. Connor McDavid's going to blow that away in assists this year.
Connor McDavid and Nikita Kucherov have more assists than Jamie Benn had points when he won the Art Ross.
And like, I just think about like, looking back on it, there was a time outside, like Crosby was hurt, and I was wondering, like, who's the actual like star here? Like Ovechkin's there, but it was before Stamkos had blossomed, and it was like, oh, I guess like Datsyuk maybe is like a big name, and it's awesome. But like right now, if you can go to pretty much any team except for the Arizona Coyotes, and even then, like Logan Cooley will be a star one day. But you can go to them,
Gunther too,
and Dylan Gunther will be a star one day, and all that. But like you can go to pretty much any team and point to a player and go like, this guy is a stud. Like, like not just a stud, but like
OMG, we're going to do that. We have time. I'm going to name off the teams and you got to tell me who their star is. You only get one.
Only one? Okay.
Well, actually, yeah, you get one. All right. We'll start with the Canadian teams. Vancouver.
Elias Pettersson. Quinn Hughes.
Perfect. Edmonton, we're not going to talk about that. Calgary.
Well, current Calgary is tough.
Right.
Like, okay. They're one of the ones that's not, but like, come
so
on.
Let's see how many teams don't have it.
Okay.
Okay. So Calgary.
Go ahead.
Winnipeg.
I mean, I guess you could say Mark Scheifele.
Connor Hellebuyck, I think.
Connor Hellebuyck, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Toronto.
Austin
done.
Matthews.
Ottawa.
William Nylander, yeah. Ottawa. I would say like Tim Stützle could be there one day.
Not I think he's the closest they have.
Yeah. He's definitely the closest.
He's the closest. Montreal. They don't have anybody right now.
No, they don't. Oh no! Here come the mob. I do think.
We said star, not superstar. I do think Caulfield and Slavkovsky have the potential to get there. They're not there yet.
Caulfield better kick it up a notch too.
Like, Buffalo.
Bit, yeah, I could name like three.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, Boston, Pasternak, done. The Rangers.
And McAvoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rangers, again.
I could do Panarin.
Fox. Shesterkin. Whatever.
Anyone, yeah.
The Islanders, Matthew Barzal.
Yeah.
Or Noah Dobson at this point.
And Noah Dobson, yeah. And Sorokin.
Yeah, the Devils. Yeah.
Jack Hughes. Yeah.
Then, like, okay, so now we're literally going, Chicago, not going to have the discussion. We already know. Yeah.
But based on last night, too, Frank Nazar. Like, Nazar, you know, like.
Florida.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Sasha Barkov, Sam Reinhart.
Even Aaron Ekblad. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Carolina. Any number of players.
Just name a bunch. Svechnikov, Aho.
Gensel.
Gensel, Slavin, you know, like any of those guys.
Tampa, there's about five of them. Washington.
Ovechkin.
Self-explanatory. Yeah. Detroit. Larkin.
Dylan Larkin.
Philadelphia. Nothing yet. Michkov coming.
I would say Konechny's close there.
Close.
But he's not a super, like, he's not a star.
He's not a star.
He's just a very, very, he's like an 85.
Yeah.
You know?
Pittsburgh.
Sidney Crosby, Liam Malkin, Chris Letang, Eric Karlsson, Jake Gant. Oh, wait.
Literally anyone.
Yeah.
Columbus. Adam Fantilli, I think, is probably there. Like, he's going to get there.
He will get there.
I have no doubt about it. Dallas.
I mean, Miro Heiskanen, Jason Robertson, Rupe Hintz, Jake Ottinger, you know, like.
Does Colorado have anybody?
Nathan McKinnon.
Kale McCarr,
Mikko Rantanen, list goes on.
Exactly. So, like, then you go to, like, L.A., Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty.
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
No, Jesus Christ. Nashville, self-explanatory on that one. Roman Saros.
Forsberg even.
Vegas, Eichel.
Everyone that got to the deadline.
Actually, everyone.
But like Eichel, Stone, like all those guys,
San Jose is going to be whoever the first overall pick is this year.
So Macklin Celebrini, And even then, like, I think, like, Eklund can potentially be there one.
I love Eklund, yeah.
Like, can potentially be there one
Will
day.
Will Smith.
Will Smith can be there one day. You know, like, they have
some But right
some
now,
good
they
guys.
Don't have anybody. Yeah, no. Which, fine.
By design, too.
Anaheim, Leo Carlson is
well, yeah,
going to
like
be
Leo
a
Carlson.
Star.
I think Mintyukov can be is going to be really good.
Oh, yeah, Mintyukov is going to be good.
Zellweger could get really good as well.
McTavish.
Like Mason McTavish.
They're going to be good. The Ducks are going to be good.
Costello, was it Colangelo, the guy they just
Sam
got?
Colangelo,
yeah.
He's
pretty good, too.
I think, like, he's a good middle six guy, but,
yeah,
like, not a star.
Not a star, but, like,
I think Leo Carlson is
Leo Carlson's
is the
like,
guy
the sky's the limit for him. Yeah.
Seattle.
Matty Beniers?
Yep. That's who I was going to go with.
And Vince Dunn.
Yeah, Vince Dunn's pretty good. Yeah. Minnesota, Kaprizov.
I mean, yeah, Kaprizov. But then, like,
oh, and
Matt
Louis Boldy's, is the
other Matt
one.
Boldy could be nipping at the heels one day. Yep. You know, like stuff. And then St. Louis, Jordan Kyrou, Robert Thomas. I mean, they're not stars yet. Like, they've kind of plateaued.
I think Kyrou is, like, on the precipice.
Yeah, I think so,
that.
Too.
So, yeah, like, I don't... Not every team has, like, a star,
dude, like,
star, but, like...
What, there were, like, six teams we mentioned that didn't have a definitive, like, star.
And then there were a few teams where, like, there's five of them.
If you go back, yeah, if you go back, like, 5, 6, 7 years, and you do that poll, that survey around the league, that number's down to, like, 2019, maybe. Like, there are a lot of teams that were good, but they had a lot of mid guys on there. And mid can get you far sometimes, like, because it's, you know, greater than the sum of your parts. But the star power, the depth of star power every year, like, I feel like there are less. This also happens, too, when there are less draft busts than there have ever been. Like, the bust rate is
much lower. It's, I believe I saw
it's never
like
been lower.
30% lower or something like that. Like, it's near there. As like
I don't think it's ever been lower. Like you really 20s. Can't imagine a guy. Cause like back in the day, like
they were drafting like Dylan McElrath at like 10th overall.
Like back in the day, like you'd get a top five pick and he'd just never play. Like Garrett, like Griffin Reinhardt. Would
Nikita
just never
Filatov.
Play. Nikita Filatov, like any Jaredev, any of these guys, they would just like, you know, you would even, I even think of guys like, friggin' Hugh Jessamine, the huge specimen.
Man.
Like, the guy, he was picked, I think that guy
Alexander
was picked,
Alexander
like,
Daigh.
Well, yeah, obviously, but, like, there were guys like Daigh. There were guys like Patrick Steffen. There were guys, you know, like, there would, when was the last time, like, the last real bona fide number one overall bust was, like Nail Yakupov, and even then, he had a decent rookie year.
And then Nolan Patrick was injured.
Yeah, that doesn't even
that
count.
That doesn't even really count.
But, like,
count.
When's the last time, like, a top three pick just vanished, or top five pick even just vanished?
Well,
like,
it was that year that the Yakupov, Murray, Galchenyuk, Reinhardt, Riley
even,
year.
Even then, Murray carved out like a 10-year career.
Yeah, like he was, but he wasn't like a.
He wasn't a star, but
he
at
was.
Least,
remember the conversation we were having about Slafkovsky and people dumped on us because I said
I'll never forget that
a
conversation,
bust.
Rachel.
Ryan Murray is actually a fantastic comparison. Mm-hmm. He's a bust in the sense that in no world was he worth a second overall pick, but he had a fine career.
He had a perfectly fine career. At his peak, he was a very good number four defenseman.
Like,
yeah.
Fine. So I think obviously you want something more out of a pick like that. Whereas, like, if Ryan Murray would have carved out that career as a 21st overall pick, you're like, hey, that's,
like, fine,
that's
man.
What we were expecting.
We got 10 years of, like, decent top four hockey.
I expect a fucking superstar if I'm drafting you in the top three.
But we've seen a lot of that.
A
like
fucking superstar.
We've seen a lot of that. There are basic, like, if you go back through the drafts, the guys are being picked even top 10. Like, they're, like in basically after that Yakupov draft, like, I would say since Matthews got drafted, the top 10 picks, like, they've made their...
Ole Ulevi.
I mean, obviously, there's going to be a Vertanen or Olievi.
And they're going to be for the same team.
And they're going to be for the same. But even like Nick Ritchie, man, like, he carved out a career.
Yeah, he was playing,
you know, like,
until this year.
You don't see these huge busts. And so, like, just the depth of hockey talent in the world from both in the NHL and at an amateur level has never been higher. It's fantastic.
I think we love it.
Who
so
knows
I think...
who could break 70 goals in the next little bit?
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I mean, I loved doing this breakdown because I feel like we hear a lot of people talking about, like, how impressive it is, and they're both individually impressive, but I think to contextualize it in the sense of, like, one's been done 13 times, another's been done 11, but then you have, like, the 50-plus even strength goals that's really era-adjusted been done 3 times, and then, like, from a goal-scoring perspective, it's been done way less, and then from an assist perspective... It's actually been done, like, it would be the 7th best season of all time, whereas Matthews would be the 2nd best season of all time, or yeah, third at the very lowest. So I think it's, frankly, it's slightly more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They're both insanely impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
But one is slightly more impressive than the other. And that's kind of where I sit on it. Like if we were sitting here a year from now and Connor McDavid had 99 assists, would you be surprised?
No.
But if we were sitting here next year and Austin Matthews had 70 goals, anybody had 70 goals, would you be surprised? I would be surprised.
I'd be like, that'd raise my eyebrow at least. I could see him doing it, but it would raise my eyebrow.
I would be, yeah. Like, you know what? That's a great way of putting it.
You like, know what? Another thing too, it'd be like if you said Matthews got 70 goals and he only scored one empty netter all year.
That's a genuine.
Like I would love to run the numbers on this of being like, okay, so the even strength thing has happened X amount of times before. I want to know the highest amount of goals someone has scored in a season with the least amount of empty netters.
It is Matthews. The other one, which is ridiculous.
In my opinion, that's the most impressive goal scoring season ever. Is so 70 goals with one, you know, with 55 even strength and one empty netter.
You know what's even crazier?
What?
He leads the league in goal posts. He has 21 goal posts. If he had, I went and I did the math again. If he had like the league average for his like shooting in goal posts versus like pucks that went in, he'd have 81 goals. We would be talking about a player who is a goal a game in the year 2024.
It feels like Matthews is a goal a game at this point. It honestly anyway. Does. So but like it's, but that's just crazy. Think about that.
If he was just average as it pertained to goalposts, he'd have 80 plus goals.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I would actually just leave at that point.
That is absolutely nuts.
We're done. Yeah. But I think the most impressive thing, and this whole Hart Trophy conversation, which you and I, we're going to chat about.
Mm-hmm. On Friday.
On Friday, I think, is our playoff preview. The thing that pisses me off is they're like, oh, well, like, Kucherov should win the Hart because of what he's done. Sorry, Kucherov is dog shit defensively. Matthews is scoring 70.
And, like, a Selke candidate.
Is a Selke candidate. Yeah. So you want to talk about value to team? Maybe play both sides of the puck. I can get behind Nathan MacKinnon. But same for Connor McDavid, like he's in there with Kucherov. Unless you have to have more than one thing, because now we've just discussed that 70 goals is more impressive and he's in the Selke conversation. You guys did the less impressive thing and neither one of you are as good as defensively as Austin Matthews is. So why should you be in the Hart over him?
I'm sure Gretzky has done this at some point or whatever, but I'd be curious to see if anyone's won the Hart and the Selke in the same year.
Gretzky hasn't. I don't think Gretzky ever won a Selke.
Really?
Yeah.
So has no. Matthews could legitimately win the Hart and the Selke this year.
I think Reinhardt or Barkov's winning the Selke this year. But the fact that you're in the top five conversation tells me that you're valuable.
Like you think they're going to, but like there's a conceivable path. Like you're in contention.
Just the fact that you're in contention. If he won the Selkie,
would you be like, "That's bullshit. That's crazy. I can't believe how he did this."
I think I'd probably raise an eyebrow just because of how ridiculously good Sam Reinhart's been this year. But I think generally speaking, this conversation applies to the Hart because it's like Kucherov is good offensively. He's not good defensively. Like, sorry,
He's not.
He's just not. McDavid getting better defensively, still not great. Austin Matthews is in the Selke conversation and scoring 70 goals. You know how fucking hard that is to do?
It's the hardest thing you can do.
Exactly. Sam Reinhart is in the Selke conversation. He plays with Sasha Barkov. He's got 50-odd goals. Like, extremely difficult to do.
The only thing that can make Matthews' achievement more impressive here is if he started racking up Vezina numbers on top of that, too. Like, it's crazy.
There's a small part of me that wants him to score, like, a hat trick in one of the next two games just to put the exclamation point on, like, I might not win the Hart, but I deserve to be nominated kind of thing.
If he's not nominated, I will burn the NHL offices to the ground.
I don't think he's going to be nominated. I think it's going to be McDavid, Kucherov, bullshit. And MacKinnon.
That is fucking and it's bullshit gonna be, if he's not nominated. Media,
they're going to be like, no, it's not his turn.
Okay, the guy who scored 70 goals this year.
To be
fuck you.
He should win it, but to not even get nominated, I would call out as even as a PHWA member, I would call out the PHWA.
We're both PHWA members.
I would call that out. And I will call out every single person individually. Like, I will sit on this podcast and I will read fucking names.
If he's not even nominated, like, I will fist fight them all. Like, right? Individually.
There is no excuse. Five guys go on the Hart Trophy ballot. There is zero excuse to leave any of McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon, or Kucherov off your ballot. You can pick your fifth. I don't care. But if those four aren't on the ballot, you don't deserve a vote.
If those four aren't on the ballot, you should be beaten to death with hammers in a parking lot. And on that note, we're done on this podcast today. But make sure to subscribe to YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Do all of that. We have some Mike's Meals for One branded content that's coming out. It'll be a lot of fun. That should be hitting next week, end of this week. We'll see. And then also on top of that, make sure to donate to Jumpstart, our charity of choice. Jumpstart helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is just so much fun and something that's so important to Rachel and I. So all the links are in the description below. If you're able to, please donate. And Rachel, I will see you on Friday.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.